All right, welcome to another WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. I just false started on the open, and Andrew is waiting patiently. We're going to talk about some NBA because Andrew's been a little bit frustrated that all my NBA talks seem to be with people who are kind of anti-NBA at the moment, other than Kirk. Kirk was trying to represent, but Andrew wanted a chance to kind of weigh in. And well, actually, I guess you probably switched. You're now on the anti-NBA bandwagon?
No, now I'm NFL free. That's what I am for the rest of this year, NFL free until the draft.
Yeah, I think a lot of Browns fans are going to be NFL free with Ray Lewis and Art Modell patches and all kinds of things going on.
The minute I don't know why I made the mistake of watching the post game in the locker room after the AFC Championship game, but the instant I saw Ray Lewis wearing an Art Modell shirt, like, I just lost it, and That was it. It was sensory overload, and I was just like, all right, I am done until the draft. I have no interest in this Super Bowl whatsoever. Because the Ravens are going to win. They're going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, and I was like, I can't believe he was still watching.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I just kind of had it on, and I was just sitting there kind of watching, and I was kind of numb. And at least that like sort of snapped me out of that. I wasn't numb anymore. Then I was just mad, so...
Well, I'm going to break from my own rules about the Super Bowl and Super Bowl parties, and I think we're actually going to do some visiting with some friends during the Super Bowl because now I have such a lack of interest in the actual game that I might as well, you know, accomplish something of value during that game.
That's not a bad way to do it. Build up some political capital by going and spending time at somebody's Super Bowl party and say, "See, look, I came."
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we're going to be down in Orlando, so it's not even just visiting. It's visiting in a nice place.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, so hopefully they have a pool. Then I could just, you know, really ignore the game and swim.
Exactly.
All right, so anyway, we're going to talk about this NBA stuff. It's not quite as simple as just saying, I'm not like TD where I'm NBA free. I've just said all along that I refuse to be one of these nationalized universal NBA fans. I'm a Cavs fan. That's all I care about. And honestly, it's been near impossible to be a Cavs fan for quite a while now since LeBron left. The hangover is tough, man.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's been tough for a lot of people, and it's such a transition. Not that, you know, not like we were used to this period of winning, you know, before LeBron got there, but certainly I think we just kind of became accustomed to the Cavs certainly being in the spotlight. It was exciting and it was fun. I mean, no matter what, amongst everything else, I mean, it was just fun watching those teams play and watching LeBron play night in and night out. And and just to go from that extreme to the extreme that followed, going through, you know, the record-breaking losing streak, and even still, I mean, the Cavs are winning games at about a, 23% clip? I mean, it's a tough transition to get to, and I understand why it's certainly tough for a lot of Cavs fans. I would say that if we're talking about the rebuild process, and we can kind of get into that a little bit, but I think that we're sort of in the valley right now. That this is the dog days of the rebuild. You know, you had to hit sort of rock bottom, and as much as we thought, oh well, hey, this losing streak is rock bottom. That actually wasn't rock bottom because the team hadn't even started the rebuild when they did that. I mean, you know, Kyrie wasn't here yet. I mean, hardly any of the players that were on that team are still even around now. There's been such turnover, so you know, it's you hate to say, I know you hate hearing it's a process, but it really is. You have to go through this in order to get better. It's the only way to do it in the NBA.
Well, but I just think there was such a tenuous, you know, I think there were a lot of us, a lot of people, and I'll include myself in this, you know, where I even saying I'm going to be a Cavs fan, that it took a lot for me to even get there, because it just seemed in the post decision world, it just seemed like, you know, the whole sport had just lost me. And as much as I enjoyed watching basketball, it was so unprecedented and so big. I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to come back from it.
Well, you guys know, I mean, especially, you know, you guys in the writers run the email chains. I mean, you know how much I love the NBA, but even for me, right in the moment after that decision, I mean, it was tough. It just, I think the biggest thing was there was this overwhelming sense of what's the point? You know, if it was like, here's a kid who grew up right next door to Cleveland. It was the perfect story for this guy to come and deliver Cleveland its championship. And we all bought in. I mean, we were all in on LeBron, and we all dared to believe that this was going to be the guy to change all that. And obviously, in hindsight, there were certainly signs that this wasn't the savior that we thought he was going to be. So maybe we shouldn't have been as surprised. But there was certainly that feeling of, well, what's the point? If this guy can't stay here and won't stay in Cleveland, what's the point? How are you ever going to build a championship if you can't even keep a hometown kid to come here and stay? I don't know, though. I think in some aspects, I hate to say like LeBron was too big for Cleveland, because I don't think that's necessarily true. I just think he was the wrong mentality. He didn't have the mentality. He didn't grow up rooting for the Cleveland sports teams. I think as much as he maybe, I'm sure he would have liked to have delivered a championship to Cleveland. I have no doubt about that, that he really, really, really wanted to do it. But I think when he was looking at himself in the mirror and he was a free agent and he just said, I have to care about my legacy and do what I think is going to be best for me, and I'm just not confident that I can do it here.
I get all that, but for me, a lot of what turned me off, and this is why it took so much for me to even still be a Cavs fan, let alone an NBA fan. It felt like such a systemic failure. I mean, here we've got baseball where you expect guys to leave because there is no salary cap, and here the Cavaliers were in the driver's seat. They could pay him the most money. They were spending like crazy around him. They were doing crazy maneuvers to bring people here, and he still left. And it was like, well, if you can't keep a guy, a hometown guy in a system that's set up to favor the home team, and then he makes a choice and then backfills it with some cockamamie trade. And yes, I just use the word cockamamie because I'm feeling 60 years old tonight, but it just, the system, you know, what's the point? It wasn't really even so much about LeBron at that point. It was like, what's the point? This game that has Boston and LA winning, you know, 75 or 80% of the championships or whatever it is. It's just.
Yeah, there's not an easy answer for that.
But I think that's the hangover we're still dealing with. Me personally and everybody else. It's not just LeBron. It's the system. And yes, they've had a new collective bargaining agreement and a lockout and everything else. But I think that's the bigger hurdle. It's not so much about analyzing LeBron as an individual anymore. It's trying to figure out if Dan Gilbert can work the system, if the Cavs can work the system to ever do it, even if they're perfect.
Yeah, well, the thing about that system is for the entire history of that particular iteration of the system, it had always worked. No team that had the bird rights on a max contract player had lost their superstar. It hadn't happened. No superstar had been willing to say, I'm not going to take the max. I'm going to take less to go somewhere else. And when I think that was another thing that we all thought, yeah, the Cavs had that in their favor. And that's where it's, again, LeBron broke even that trend, that, you know, not even the advantage of just being from Cleveland, but the fact that the Cavs could offer him the most money, and it was a system designed to keep him here.
But
and
he kept more money. I mean, he didn't get the full max, but he got more than he would have got by retrofitting a trade after the fact.
Yeah, but he would have left either way. That was sort of the Cavs' attempt to just get something just
in
case.
Wait a minute. You don't think Pat Riley was selling him on that the whole way?
Oh, I'm sure that he said, hey, look, there's no doubt in my mind the Cavs are going to trade and we'll make up some of that money. I just think that...
systemic failure.
Yeah. But I don't think that was the driving factor. I don't think that... If that hadn't happened, I don't think LeBron would have said, well, then I am definitely coming back to Cleveland. I don't think it was as much about, you know, the money as it was a unique opportunity for him to you know, team up with a couple of his friends. And I think he just looked around. He had lost to those Celtics teams. And I think he just said, enough's enough. I'm going to go form a super team of my own. And the real tragedy is that he couldn't convince him to do it in Cleveland, that he had to go do it in Miami. And so, I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, it was a systematic failure, and I don't even know if they really fixed it. We won't really see the effects of what just happened with that lockout for another couple of years. It's going to take some time for this to all sort of, you know, sort itself out as different contracts hit different levels, to see, you know, what teams are willing to really, you know, go at that luxury tax level, and who's really going to be willing to pay a pretty stiff penalty for exceeding that salary cap. So just as we're in the process of the rebuild for the Cavs, I think we're in the process for this collective bargaining agreement as well, to see sort of where it goes. But all that set aside, the game itself, like the product itself, is actually really great. I mean, the NBA is really putting on some great basketball. It's just unfortunate that it feels like that sort of all passed us by. And here in Cleveland, we're left behind picking up the pieces and saying, okay, well, now how can we get back in the game and get back to where it feels like the NBA cares about us, and where, you know, the NBA matters to Cleveland?
What percentage of the NBA do you think could actually carry a broadcast on TNT?
That's a good question. I mean,
is it even two thirds?
I mean, are you just saying to get an average, viewership?
I'm just saying that the product on the court is in such a shape that the Cavaliers haven't been on TNT in what, 3-4 years?
Not since LeBron left. Well, I think that first game was on TNT.
Yeah, they put that one up on a spotlight so that everybody could see the Cavs get hammered and embarrassed on national TV.
Of course, why not?
But other than that, how many teams total do you think make an appearance on TNT every year, and how many teams get left out completely? That's a big thing to me. I know every sport has its problems, but baseball doesn't really rely on the national telecast. That's not the driving force. So that's, I mean, baseball is rigged in totally different ways. Whenever I criticize the NBA, people always want to say, well, what about baseball? And I'm, okay, it's broken too. It's just a totally different set of brokenness. The NBA, I always had the NBA up to this standard that they could beat baseball in terms of fairness based on the salary cap. And then, as I said, the system failed, and I don't know. That's the selling point. I understand where the Cavs are. I understand what they're trying to do. I don't think that they've, even if it fails, I don't think that they've made any huge mistakes in the way that they've tried to do this whole thing. But I just, at the end of the day, I'm still hung over in the system and wondering if it's even worth it.
Well, I can't answer that. I honestly can't sit here and, you know, talk you off the ledge and say, hey, trust this new system, it's going to work, because I just don't know. I have very conflicted feelings about, you know, whether teams and look, this is all going to play out with LeBron again, because it's all going to come down to what does Miami want to do when they face, you know, what's about to happen to them in terms of having to pay the luxury tax and being able to build a team around those three players.
They're going to have to sell a lot of cruises.
Yeah, exactly. But so we just don't know. But LeBron's going to be the centerpiece of it again. I mean, that's just the reality of it. We're gearing up. This is going to be the decision 2.0 to see, you know, here in a couple of years, does LeBron opt out or does he pick up his option? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the system might, you know, affect what Miami's doing, but even then, there's no guarantee. I think there's a certain standpoint I keep seeing, like, oh, if LeBron leaves, he'll go back to Cleveland. Well, there's a lot of other teams he could go to too. I don't necessarily think it's going to be down to just Cleveland or Miami.
Why wouldn't he go to LA?
Exactly. Particularly if they lose Dwight Howard, and, you know, Dwight Howard goes somewhere else, he might go to LA. Although, again, LA doesn't really have a young core for him to sort of, you know, go through the rest of his prime with. And I think that's the one thing that's going to be attractive about Cleveland. For put aside all the issues of, you know, what, how the fans feel about him and how he feels about Dan Gilbert and how Dan Gilbert might feel about him. All that awkwardness, just throw that aside. Just talk about the basketball itself. The Cavs have a pretty enticing situation to tell LeBron that he can walk into, because look, the Cavs are going to have, you know, another good draft pick coming up this year that we, you know, hopefully will pan out. And I don't necessarily think the Cavs are going to be all that good next year either. So I think, you know, that's could be another draft pick that coming into the fold, and the Cavs will have lots of cap space. And, you know, they've got Kyrie Irving and a core of really young, good players, you know, whether Tristan Thompson and Deion Waiters, you know, whether they become stars or not might not be so much the point. But if they're just solid, serviceable, really good basketball players, that's a good young core for LeBron to walk into. Because if you're asking me what do the Cavaliers need to sort of jumpstart them and get them out of this, you know, basement dwelling and, you know, sort of get them kickstarted, they need an impact scorer in the front court, whether that be from the three, the four, or the five. That they just need that impact scorer. And I think the instant you insert, not even necessarily LeBron, but any impact scorer from those positions, you're going to see a rapid rise out of the Cavaliers. So the Cavs are still very far away, but they're not as far as maybe their record might indicate.
And yeah, I don't know. It's just the gap between, you know, what you see from these teams playing on TNT versus where the Cavs are. It's more than just the record. I mean, it's those teams wipe the floor with the Cavs. They don't even have to try. And so I don't know. Is the product on TNT worth all the inequity?
Because
I think David Stern would say yes.
Maybe he would. I don't think that I don't think that David Stern views it as wanting, you know, big market teams to necessarily be good. I think he just cares about it couldn't matter. I don't think David Stern held it against, like, oh, when LeBron was with the Cavaliers, I don't think it bothered him that he played for Cleveland. I think he just really liked that Cleveland was exciting and everybody wanted to watch the Cavaliers play. But there is a certain inequity. I don't know. There's an inequity in almost every sport, though. I mean, who cares about outside of Cleveland? Who cares about the Cleveland Browns? You know, that yes, they get some token, you know, Thursday night game or whatever. But I don't think the NFL is trying to prop up Cleveland any more so than the NBA is trying to do with anybody. I think that's just the nature of the sport. You've got, you know, the haves and the have-nots, and Cleveland has been on both sides of that equation before.
But the haves in the NFL, you know, it's almost. You know, you could have a have in Green Bay and Indianapolis and, you know, I would say even the Oklahoma City Thunder at this point. I mean, that's an outlier. That's not the standard.
Well, but you've got Oklahoma City. You've got San Antonio, you know, Denver, Utah has been good for a lot of years. I think there's a mix. I think it just kind of changes. It's just the constants are always Boston and Los Angeles. You know, those two are the constants. They're the kings of the sport that everybody else is trying to catch up to. again, the NFL probably doesn't quite have that. Certainly, you know, there's model franchises, Pittsburgh and, you know, even San Francisco being back in there.
Yeah, and even those rotate a little bit. You know, St. Louis was a hotbed for a long time. And the Patriots were a joke before Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Almost the entire time before Tom Brady. You know, it's funny. Everybody remembers the Bears like they were something special. They only won one. But yeah. No, I don't know. I guess it's still the hangover talk, and I'm still trying to get myself back in. And I do miss it, man. Before every NBA season, I always say that the NBA fans and the media on Twitter are the best. The rallying around an NBA game on Twitter, it's an actual happening. You feel like you're physically hanging out with people. It's so much fun. And the lack of relevance for the Cavs is just you know, kind of crush my spirit in terms of that. Even I can't sit there and comment on a TNT game. I'm one of these guys. I need to be invested. You know, I'll watch any NFL game, and I can get a little bit invested because that's definitely my favorite sport. But sure. Not. I need a dog in the fight in the NBA.
That's interesting. I guess I don't know though. I guess maybe that's just a different point of view.
Same with baseball.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's. I mean, I kind of feel that way about baseball. Like, I don't watch, you know, when the ESPN has their Sunday night baseball game. I don't know if I really ever will watch that game. But I, you know, and I'll be upfront. Baseball's not, you know, it's not my favorite sport. Whereas with basketball, yeah, I mean, you put the Knicks and the Rockets on TNT. Like, I can watch that game, and I think that is actually a really good product. You're going to see some really good basketball being played, some really good stars, and you'll see players doing things that'll, you know, just, you know, sort of leave your jaw dropped. I mean, I find a certain excitement in that, and. You know, I love watching the Cavs. I watch every Cavs game. Don't get me wrong, but right now the product the Cavs are putting on the court is not helping anybody with this hangover. I think that's really the bottom line. Like, I can sense, you know, you're saying, you know, you want to get out of this hangover and you want to be excited about it again. Well, it's hard to do when the team is sitting there at, you know, 10-32. Like, it's hard to be excited about that. And ultimately, that's the problem. And as bad as the Cavs are, it's just been injury after injury after injury. Like, it just feels like even as bad as they are, they can't even put their best foot forward. So it's a grind right now for the Cavs. It really is. And all this season is for the Cavaliers is getting experience. Experience for the young players, particularly. I think, you know, really need to keep an eye on Deion and see how Deion does here down, you know, in the second half of the season, because, you know, his ceiling, whatever Deion Waiters becomes, is really going to impact how quickly this is going to turn around for the Cavaliers. Because, you know, if he can reach us, you know, I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but if he can be, you know, hanging around, you know, a star level, and, you know, at least be in the discussion of, you know, is he or is he not an all-star? If he's playing at that kind of a level, I think the Cavs rebuild is going to go a lot quicker. Because if it's not, we're still sitting there with just Kyrie and nothing else, and that's certainly a kind of a scary proposition to look at.
So, do you think Byron Scott sees? Do you think he'll see the Cavs on the other side of this? I see a lot of criticism of Byron Scott of late, and I think in a lot of ways he's got an impossible task trying to coach this team up to a level higher than their age allows. But I do see a lot of complaints about the rotations, and the people who are watching every minute of every game are a little bit frustrated with the strings he's pulling. Do you think he sees the turnaround for this franchise?
Probably not. I don't know. It's one of those things you wish you could hear how the conversations go between Byron and Chris Grant and, you know, Dan Gilbert, and sort of when they talk, what's their vision for this rebuild and what are their expectations out of Byron and their expectations out of this team. If they're telling him, look, we don't care about any of this, you know, mess around with the rotation, see if you can find different things that work, just, you know, try and develop different skills of these players, and worry about losing, you know, worry about winning next year or the year after that, then maybe they're in it for the long haul with him. But I am not a necessarily a huge Byron Scott fan. When I watch these teams, I don't see a team that looks like necessarily like a really well-coached team. They go through certain lulls that he really seems to struggle to pull them out of, you know, and certainly in terms of matchups and, you know, mixing up his rotations to sort of identify a mismatch that he can exploit on his opponents. I don't see a lot of that. And, And that's one thing that I always liked about Mike Brown. I always thought Mike Brown was actually pretty good at that. People will say a lot of things about Mike Brown as a X's and O's coach, and even as, you know, is he a real motivational guy? And that may not be true, but I don't question how smart Mike Brown was about coaching the game of basketball. Like I when I watch his teams, I saw him doing some of that. He would go to a small lineup when it made sense, or go to a huge lineup when it made sense, to try to exploit something that he saw. And certainly in the way he got that team to defend and play defense, like those are things that you can say, you want to lob criticisms at him, that's fair, but those are things that you can point to and say, this is what Mike Brown does really well. If you were to say to me, well, what does Byron Scott do really well? I have a really hard time answering that right now, because we just haven't seen it. But the deck stacked against him. I mean, nobody could have won with, you know, these teams they've had the last 2 years. And, you know, looking at this year's team, I didn't expect them to be good, but I did not expect them to be this bad. I certainly did not expect them to be sitting here with the second worst record in the NBA right now. So
is this, what, 3 years in a row where they've been far worse than we ever expected them to be?
I don't know about last year. Last year I really thought they were going to be pretty bad, and I think they were probably about as bad as I thought, but I did not think they'd be as bad as they were 2 years ago. That blew my mind how quickly that team declined. Like, I mean, and maybe it all came down to that game against LeBron. I don't know. I mean, but you know,
that team had no heart.
Yeah, but what's crazy about that, though, like, if you remember, I don't know if you remember, if you watched the first game that we played without LeBron, it was
against Boston,
the opener against Boston. Yeah. And the heart that we saw out of that team, they fought and they scrapped and they won and they beat that Boston team. And, I mean, it was such a great feeling. And I was like, all right, like, this team is going to fight this year. And, you know, it kind of went downhill pretty quickly after that. They lost a few games after that, and then they were winning a couple. But, man, December 2nd came, and LeBron came to town. And once again, he just sucked the air out of that franchise, and they never recovered from that. And so yeah, that year's team was certainly a lot worse than I expected him to be. And this year's team, too. I was tweeting before the season started, saying that I really thought that the Cavs might be the worst defensive team in the NBA, and I just said this defense is just going to be atrocious. And I caught a little bit of slack from some people who said, "What are you talking about? You know, Tristan's a good defender, and they're bringing in, you know, Deion Waiters could defend."
Well, and in all fairness, Varejao was not supposed to miss this many games. For sure. In your projections, anyway.
Right. But even with Andy, we were still giving up well over 100 points a game. Teams were shooting 50% against us like it was nothing. Inability to stop them in transition defense is just atrocious. And so I shouldn't be surprised at how bad they are, because I kind of was worried about this defense, but somehow it's even been worse than what I expected. And that's what's disappointing. That's what has me frustrated as a fan. Like, I'm willing to be patient with this team and let them go through it, and that's fine. Like, I see what they're trying to do, and I'm on board with this rebuild and the way that they're doing it. And I don't, you know, people will keep pointing out, you know, different guys that are free agents and say, well, why don't we pick up this guy or that guy? Like, you're telling me he can't help this team? And yeah, he can help this team. He can help this team win a couple more games. But what's the point of that? Like, so I'm willing to be patient with it. I'm just frustrated with how bad they are, especially on defense. Like, and that's one of those things. Like, I feel like Byron understands it. I mean, he says the right things. You know, he sort of talks the talk, and, you know, I'll listen to him speak, and he gets it. He can see it, but I'm not really seeing any – I'm not seeing what adjustments he's making, and I don't know. Right now, it's a bad basketball team. That's all it is.
So what do you think about the whole Tank Strong thing? I mean, obviously, I don't really truly believe it. I also – quite obviously, the Cavaliers aren't trying to pick up those extra two or three wins via free agency, expensive free agency, and I can get on board with that. But what about the fact that the NBA and the draft and the way it goes kind of, you know, is accepting of tanking probably more so than any other sport? I mean, I guess the NFL is kind of subject to it as well. But, I mean, did you ever get the feeling that Indianapolis was tanking last year?
I don't think so at all. Not that Indianapolis team. I mean, that was just again that was sort of a, you know, you take Peyton Manning out of that equation.
It's Curtis Painter.
Yeah, it's not all that different from taking LeBron out of the equation in Cleveland. Especially, it's actually a really good comparison because as much as everybody says, oh, the Cavs didn't have any good players with LeBron, like that's a bunch of bull. Like they had really good players, but they were all brought here with a specific purpose because they fit around LeBron in a particular way. Well, then the problem is when you take that centerpiece out, then you have guys who are all built to work around that one thing that's not there anymore.
It's something deeper too, though, because it was the heart. You know, when LeBron left, that team wasn't as bad as they played. As you know, we saw that, as you referenced, the opening win against Boston, they could actually do some things. And that Indianapolis team with Dwight Freeney and Reggie Wayne and all those guys, they didn't believe in themselves without Peyton Manning, and they had no heart.
Yeah, and I think you saw that's part of what led to even the quick turnaround. As good as Andrew Luck is, I think part of it is just putting that belief back in, that it gave them a sense of confidence and sort of stabilized everything, and they were able to turn it around quickly. And that's maybe something that, you know, isn't happening here in Cleveland quite yet. But look, they've cast off all of those parts. I mean, the Cavaliers are completely different. And
right, but back to the question. So, is that a fundamental flaw in the NBA that a proper rebuild, one that we can all get behind, requires them to stink for four straight years at least?
Well, I'm probably going to get these numbers wrong, but I know they're pretty close. ESPN did a study of what factors lead into NBA champions, and they found that 37% comes from drafting well, and only 7% comes from free agency. So there's a huge disparity there in how to be successful in building a team. I mean, there's real evidence there that says if you want to win a championship, you have to do it through the draft. The hardest part, really, I've been saying this over and over, but the hardest part is over. Kyrie Irving is maybe not, I don't know, maybe he can't take over games at a point guard position in the way, you know, LeBron can as a small forward. But look, this kid is a superstar. He is. I mean, he's putting up insane numbers for his age. I mean, Jacob and I were exchanging some emails back and forth, you know, just doing all kinds of crazy lookups on the play index on Basketball Reference, you know, under the age of 20, over this many points with this efficiency rating. And I mean, Kyrie Irving is in company with very few players who have put up the kind of numbers that he is at this age. So I think that's really the hard part. Now it's just about finding that the next piece that, and like I said, I really think that that's an impact scorer in the front court. I really think you put a good young guy that can take some of that burden off and get some consistent scoring inside the paint. It's going to make a huge difference for this team. It's going to free up what Kyrie can do as well. And I think that this team will be on its way. So, I don't necessarily think it's all that bad of a thing to have to build through the draft for a couple years. I'd much prefer this to playing a bunch of mediocre basketball year in and year out, you know, for 8 years, just hoping at some point to somehow get the magical combination of players that you can suddenly become good. Like, that's a really hard way to.
Right. No, and I would never, you know, I've been through, that was when I cut my teeth as a Cavs fan. You know, my college roommates, if you got them on the side, they would probably still make fun of me. That was back in the days where I was saying, well, if Zydrunas is healthy and they've got, they'll be dominant in the front court, blah, 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 blah. You know, I did that to them for years in the late 90s and early 2000s, early 2000. And, they probably wanted to throw me out the window. They were all from, you know, New Jersey and New York and Boston, and they had watched some real basketball in the last decade. But, no, I just wonder, it's not so much about localizing the question. It's about taking it to a 10,000 foot level. And just, I'm still at the point where I want the NBA as a whole to be better. You know, it's got the salary cap. It should have an advantage over Major League Baseball. It should aspire to be as good or better than the NFL, which, you know, has its own problems, but is certainly the king of the hill right now. Yeah. And And I had so many more hopes for the NBA, especially while the Cavs had LeBron and, you know, the Bird rights, and everything seemed in the right context for the Cavaliers to keep it going. And it just a breakdown.
I think that in retrospect, I think, you know, years from now, when people look back and talk about this era, I think the one sort of seismic shift that happened was certainly the Boston moves, getting Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. But again, in order for them to be able to do that, people forget how bad that Boston team became. Like, people forget.
You know, I don't. I loved it.
Well, yeah, you were there. You know, the Celtics were in bad shape. They, like, it took them a long time to recover from losing Larry Bird. And you know, what happened was they sort of stockpiled a bunch of draft picks. They got pretty bad. And, you know, they, you know, picked an intriguing young player in Al Jefferson. So they were able to sort of, you know, they were able to swing some draft picks. And I think they sent Wally Szczerbiak and Delonte West, I think, to Seattle for Ray Allen. And then they sent Al Jefferson and, I think they had two first-round picks that they sent to Minnesota for Garnett, and then boom, they were in business. But that sort of started an arms race, I think, in the NBA, and that's, we're still sort of seeing the effects of that, because shortly after that was when the Lakers made their swing to get Pau Gasol.
Let me go back in time, because I brought it up. So 95-96 was the first. Was the beginning of the playoff drought for the Celtics. They missed the playoffs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight years. Yeah. And they didn't make the playoffs again until 2001-2002. And they had two seasons. They had a 98-99, they only won 19 games, and 96-97, they only won 15 games.
Yeah. So it's what the Cavaliers are going through is not, you know, necessarily a unique thing. I just think that's what teams have to do. There's no other way to do it. I mean, the Bulls.
Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. It was the Rick Pitino era too.
Well, yeah. But yeah, you know, with the exception of, you know, they had a little bit of excitement when, you know, they were trying to get it done with Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker, if you know those teams, and they tried to get the excitement back, but even that clearly wasn't enough. But yeah, once they sort of were able to swing their pieces and, you know, make their moves to finally say, okay, you know, now is the time we're going to make that leap. And they were able to pull it off. And that's what's going to be really interesting, to see what the Cavaliers do and how they do it. Because as much as everybody talks about the Oklahoma City model, look, Oklahoma City, you know, certainly awesome basketball team, but they haven't won a championship yet. So it hasn't been proven as a championship-winning model to just solely build through the draft. You know, yeah, they made a couple trades here and there, but primarily they did it through the draft. So at some point, are the Cavaliers going to say, okay, let's package, if this year, if they get, whatever pick they get, let's just say it's the number two overall pick. Do the Cavaliers decide, rather than taking that pick, do they bundle that up with Tristan and trade that somewhere and bring in a superstar to team up with Kyrie? I think that's an option that they could look at. I don't know if they will, and I haven't done enough research to really look at, you know, the sort of the numbers to see who that would be. But I'm just saying, if you're trying to look at different models and how different teams build, the teams who have won the championship, you know, Boston and Los Angeles, they did it through swinging some of their assets, draft picks and young players. They swung them for, you know, the superstars to sort of, you know, build that big core. But then you had the Dallas Mavericks. I know the Mavericks tried to do that a little bit. Like, I think that they thought that trading for Jason Kidd was sort of trying to keep up with what Boston and LA were doing. But if anything, I think that what Dallas did was sort of and it's ironic because they beat Miami to win their championship, was they sort of proved that the way Cleveland was trying to do it with LeBron could work.
Right, because Dirk Nowitzki wasn't even as talented as LeBron.
Exactly. And that's what they did. They had Dirk. That was their guy. And they were just constantly trying to fill in with, you know, veterans and,
let's bring in 2/5 of the Washington Wizards.
Exactly. You know, it was all these moves that they were just trying to piece around and say, you know, and they were competing for it every year, but they just kept falling a little bit short and falling a little bit short. So I think that's sort of what made it extra special. You know, I know a lot of Cavs fans, sort of actually enjoyed watching that the Mavericks team beat the Heat that year. But on the side, you know, above and beyond just LeBron losing in that first year, it was also just exciting for me personally to get sort of vindication is not the right word because it wasn't our team, but
proof of concept, a validation.
Because I've been saying for so many years that everybody says LeBron had to leave to win his championship. No, he didn't. They could have done it. Like, if they would have kept doing it, they probably would have broke through and won a championship this year. Now, LeBron might win more championships by going to Miami than he would have in Cleveland, and I'll accept that. I think that's probably.
You'd be crazy not to. I mean, you definitely – he increases his chances in terms of the pure number.
Exactly.
Easily.
Yeah, but don't tell me that Cavaliers team that was just running over everybody in the NBA and winning 66 games and 62 games, don't tell me that team wasn't good enough to win a championship. They were. If you put what we saw out of the playoffs, well, you know, those of us who watched the playoffs last year, if you watched that LeBron James, that was the LeBron James that we needed him to be in Cleveland.
But then again, I do want to, you know, I did get a little bit irritated where everybody kind of forgot how much that team struggled when Dwayne Wade missed games. You know, that team, I know LeBron was the MVP of that team by a long shot, but to sit there and think that, you know, Dwayne Wade didn't save them a couple times or Chris Bosh didn't save them a couple times, because Chris Bosh missed some games, and they were a different team when he was around. They almost got knocked out by Indiana.
Sure, in a lot of ways.
Well, not almost got knocked out, but they had a scare put into them.
They were facing elimination, at least.
Were they? Yeah, I guess they were.
And, not against Indiana. They were against Boston, though. They were facing elimination. But I just, I think that Chris Bosh was arguably their second best player in the postseason last year. I really liked what he was doing for them in the playoffs. Well, I mean, I didn't like it, but you know, I thought he played really well and was a big part of that. So yeah, I'll buy into that. But I'm just saying, you know,
it was a different level.
Certainly in that Indiana series, that was just LeBron saying enough is enough, and I'm willing my team to beat them. And he did it in a way that we hadn't seen since that Pistons series, when we saw where LeBron just said, we're not going to lose to these guys. And so, yeah, it would have worked. I have no doubt in my mind that it would have worked in Cleveland. But the point is, I guess, over getting back to sort of where we were going with this, I think the point is there's a lot of – there's a couple different models and ways that you can do it when you're trying to build. And we don't know where the Cavaliers are going to go, where this rebuild is going to take us. We just know that they're putting the pieces in place right now. And that's where you need intriguing young players. You need a lot of draft picks, because then you have the option. You can either take those draft picks and, you know, try and do the Oklahoma City thing where you strike gold and everybody, you hit on all your draft picks and, you know, a core grows
all right,
up
well,
and
before
develops.
Before we move along, I would just like to say that Dwayne Wade scored 30, 28, and 41 in the final three games against Indiana. So just don't rewrite history to me and tell me that LeBron willed his team to victory in that series, because somebody else might have been willing his team to victory in that series.
Maybe I'm thinking of the Boston series. I think I am thinking of the Boston series. I think it was the Boston series.
Yeah, because Dwayne Wade finished out that series 17 and 23.
Yeah, because they went through that stretch where all of a sudden, you know, where Wade was really –
but Dwayne Wade willed them past Indiana.
Yeah. All right. That's my mistake.
But either way, the point's taken, though, because in the finals it was definitely LeBron. And, I mean, for the season it was definitely LeBron. It was very obvious. But he desperately increased his chances by aligning with those two guys, because the Cavs were never – as far as I can tell, we're never going to get that guy. And previously nobody other than Boston had ever assembled that except by accident, you know, or maybe like when Shaq and Kobe teamed up for the first time, or but let's move along a little bit. Let's talk about something else that, you know, is going to be, that should be near and dear to Clevelanders' hearts. Should the NBA allow Sacramento to just move to Seattle?
They shouldn't. It's an absolute travesty what's happening to those fans in Sacramento, because, man, I mean, Sacramento is a great basketball town. Like, those are great basketball fans out there, and they don't need to lose their team. Like, they'll support that team. They just need different ownership. They want to get rid of the Maloofs, and
the whole NBA wants to get rid of the Maloofs.
Exactly, and that's the problem, is that Sacramento just hasn't been able to put together the right ownership group that makes the NBA comfortable with saying, okay, you can keep them. The problem is that Seattle sort of beat them to the punch in coming up with the right package that the NBA is comfortable with. But it's not quite over yet. Sacramento still has a chance in this thing. I thought the announcement today
was that it was pretty much over.
Well, not necessarily. What's happening is the NBA did approve the sale, but the Board of Governors has to approve the move. And if Sacramento can still come up with an ownership group with enough money to satisfy the Board of Governors can be persuaded to strike down the move. And if the team isn't moved, that would, you know, nullify the sale. So that's sort of, you know, it's an outside chance, but it's going to happen most likely. It's going to go to Seattle, and everybody know, like, Seattle deserves a basketball team too. There's no doubt about it. That's another great NBA city. And everybody, I think, sort of in the NBA certainly feels for Seattle fans. You know, they've had to watch, you know, they lost their franchise and they had to watch them become Oklahoma City Thunder, who have become everybody's darling. Like, everybody loves the Thunder, you know, and, you know, Kevin Durant is sort of the, you know, if you don't like LeBron James, Kevin Durant is your superstar, because he seems like, you know, the polar opposite of LeBron in a lot of ways. And so that has to be exceptionally tough for Seattle fans, and nobody knows that better than Cleveland fans, having to watch our team go away and watch them become the Baltimore Ravens, where they win a Super Bowl, and Ray Lewis, you know, becomes everybody's darling. Everybody loves Ray Lewis, and, you know, we have to listen to everybody glorify him and overlook, you know, some of the other issues.
And not only that, to a fan base that, you know, swears the Irsay's name to this day, there seems to be a rash of open letters. There was an open letter from Seattle fans to Sacramento fans, and now there's an open letter fan. It's just crazy. But the idea that, you know, Seattle fans, do they lose all their sympathy by, you know, so graciously or are fans just always along for the ride?
Well, I think that it shouldn't even be representative of all Seattle fans, but I think you're referencing to that open letter that the guys who made the Sonicsgate documentary wrote to Sacramento, and that really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. You know, not just in Sacramento, but, you know, I didn't like it, and I, you know, when Tom Ziller wrote that open letter back at them, I was squarely on the side of Sacramento on that. I thought that, you know, he really nailed it with the tone of his letter, and, you know, made a lot of really great points. But so I think that Seattle does lose a lot of that sympathy, because now it all just gets transferred, because now everybody's going to feel bad for Sacramento, and it's going to be all about, well, how do we get Sacramento a franchise again? And then the question is, well, where does that franchise come from? It's a vicious cycle, because I don't see the NBA expanding anytime soon. They don't need to expand. I think there's you can make an argument there might even be too many teams as there is right now.
When I would make that argument, and I haven't always been 100% against teams moving. I think, you know, I don't know. I don't remember hearing anybody complain about Vancouver moving.
Well, yeah, then that's the point. What's happening here in the NBA is, like, these good NBA cities keep losing their teams, and that's what's crazy. And, you know, meanwhile,
apologies to any Vancouver fans who maybe I didn't hear from, because it was pre-Twitter.
Yeah, but and apologies in advance to Charlotte fans, but now why does Charlotte have another franchise again already? Like, they couldn't support one franchise and they lost it. Now they've got another franchise that they're barely supporting. I don't think people would feel quite as bad to see that team move to Seattle or you know even go to Sacramento. Obviously, you know, there's going to be fans in Charlotte who care, obviously.
Let's talk about New Orleans then, because New Orleans was without an owner for a while. Why didn't the NBA buy the Sacramento Kings, force the Maloofs out, and just place the team, you know, under league ownership like they did with New Orleans?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I my guess is that it probably has to do with the fact that the Maloofs are trying to maintain a minority stake in the team, and that wouldn't have happened with the NBA, so they probably wouldn't. The Maloofs probably wouldn't have agreed to that. That's my guess, but yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, you're certainly right about that. It's not fun for anybody. Like, once you've experienced losing a franchise, like, you will always understand what those fans feel. And I'm sure there were Vancouver fans who were heartbroken, you know, when they lost that team.
And who are the Maloofs to have an opinion about anything?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, this kind of goes back to, you know, some of the things you've been saying about Art Modell and, you know,
it's like when your house goes into foreclosure. You don't, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you know,
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, but that's pure emotion talking. I know that's not financially logical. I did study finance, so I know, you know, it's not the same as a foreclosure. Just, you know, emotions talking.
Yeah, well, it's an emotional thing for any fans. Like I said, anybody who, because we went through it, I think we'll always understand what that's like, and you know, we'll always be a little bit sympathetic to that. But yeah, at the end of the day, though, the Maloofs, as long as they own the team, they can choose who they're going to sell it to, you know. And the NBA does have a right to say no to it, but if there's not a strong alternative in place, they're just going to let them sell it to whoever just to get them out of there. So that's what it all boils down to. So
will you feel better if Dan Gilbert votes against the move?
I don't think he needs to vote against the move. It's not going to stop it. To me, that's a pointless show that doesn't really mean anything.
Pittsburgh and Buffalo voted against the Browns move, I think.
Yeah, I know. But it didn't change anything. It doesn't make me feel any better about
Pittsburgh. It didn't change how you felt about Pittsburgh or Buffalo?
Not really.
Oakland, for that matter. I think it's Oakland.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, sure, I appreciate the sentiment, but they knew it wasn't going to change anything. It's an easy vote to throw out there just to sort of, you know, try to earn some brownie points, I guess. I don't know. I appreciate it, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't mean anything. I guess that's sort of my point. I don't get as much wrapped up into that kind of stuff, I guess, because all I sort of look at is the outcome of it. So, yeah.
Well, I just don't understand. I never understand a franchise moving where the fans are actually supporting the team. I mean, you can make the case that, and I know some people were even up, you know, there were even some people who were upset about the Expos moving, but I don't know. You know, of all the different moves, they kind of go on a ranking system, and the Rams moving, I don't know. The Jazz moving, that happened too early. We have no idea. It's right. Too long ago. Yeah. We know the Baltimore move to Indianapolis was really painful. We know the Cleveland move to Baltimore was really painful. We know the Seattle one was painful. The Sacramento one seems like it's up on that level with the Seattle, Baltimore, Cleveland, where this city is actually as invested in the team as some of these other cities that I put on the upper level of, you know, having lost it.
And you got to remember too that this is all Sacramento has. This is, you know, that's their team, and you know, they lose the Kings, and okay, well, now they don't have a professional franchise. So I think it's got to be especially painful from that point of view. But you know, the easiest thing to point out is obviously, you know, watch it if you're, you know, I'm sure you remember those great Lakers Kings matchups and how awesome that environment was in Arco Arena with, you know, when they were battling in those Western Conference Finals games. I mean, those fans love that team, and it's just heartbreaking, you know, watching, you know.
You always knew it was going to be really tough for the away team.
Exactly, there is something that just doesn't seem right about it, and that's the hard part about the business of sports. You know, it never seems to really be fair. The fans don't get rewarded for their level of fandom. I guess that doesn't always mean anything when you're talking business on that level with the hundreds of millions of dollars, and now franchises are $1 billion franchises, and. The fans are always the ones who get screwed.
Unless you create a new level of fan that's nationalized, only cares about the exhibition games on TNT, watches every playoff game, wants to watch for the can you believe that type of a dunk in the moment. And I truly think maybe it's my tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, but I truly think David Stern would prefer that if everybody was city and team agnostic and just was a nationalized fan for the national broadcast. I mean, you look and see what he did in finding San Antonio this year. He needed to protect that brand.
Well, my argument against that would be that I don't think that has to be an either or proposition. I look at myself, my allegiance lies 100% with the Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers don't play on Thursdays, but if they did have a game on a Thursday that wasn't a TNT game, I'm watching the Cavs game, not the TNT game. But the Cavs don't play on Thursday, so I'll watch the TNT game, and as an NBA fan, I'll get into it and I'll enjoy it. Like I love watching the best basketball players play this sport. So I don't know. I don't think it has to be an either or thing. And I think when you go to almost, the vast majority of these cities have great fans, and you see it certainly from the point of view of Cleveland. But I promise you, the Twitter community exists for almost all of these teams. So they're all behind their local team still. I just think the NBA says, we want you to like your team, and that's great. Like, we want you to support your team, but we want to try our best to compete with what football has, because football, above all else, is the one sport that, by and large, everybody will watch any football game, that's on. Monday Night Football has been a prime example. And the
Lions on Thanksgiving for years.
The Lions on Thanksgiving, absolutely. Football fans will watch football. And I don't think it's unfair for the NBA to want that. I think the NBA is perfectly within their right to say, hey, we want to put Miami versus Oklahoma City on a Thursday night, and we want you to be excited and watch that. But yeah, we still want you to support your team, but that's a great game. Like, if you love the sport of basketball, get excited about it and enjoy that. I don't have a problem with that. I think that that's okay too. I would have a problem with it, absolutely, if I felt that overwhelmingly, that's the direction they were trying to get, where you didn't care about the local team and you only cared about the national game. But I don't think that that's necessarily what's happening. I think what you're seeing is, in a lot of the younger generations especially, who sort of grew up with only fantasy sports. Like, fantasy sports, they don't know a world without fantasy sports like we do. They don't know a world without cable sports, a world without the internet to cover all of these teams, that you can have information and access about every in-depth access and analysis about every team in every sport at your fingertips. They don't know a world without that. All they know is this world of fantasy sports, this world of information, cable sports, primetime games. That's all they know. And I think you're sort of seeing it happen maybe a little bit more overall, that not just in basketball, but I think that's even the case in football. I personally have noticed certainly a lot more jerseys of a lot of different teams in any city you go to. The vast majority is still that home city, but you see it all the time. I mean, even here in Columbus, I see Oregon jerseys popping up here and there. I've seen Miami jerseys before. I've even seen Michigan jerseys in Columbus. So I just think that the younger fans are growing up with sports differently than maybe we did. And that's maybe a little bit hard to understand for us. But uh, But I don't think it's anything malicious on the part of the sports necessarily. I think it's just the nature of technology and the sort of the age that these kids are growing up into today.
Well, and I'm fully willing to admit that for me, I never dig myself in. I'm constantly changing. I'm willing to admit that I'm probably still just hungover from something as gut punching as LeBron leaving was. And you know, we'll continue to check in on it. Maybe I'm just better suited as a bandwagon fan for the NBA and the Cavaliers. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and I think that's okay.
But I never used to be. Good, tasting success turned me into a bandwagon fan, because now it's not the same thing.
Yeah, that's true from the point of view of the Cavaliers. I think, you know, when you talk about the sports overall, I can only talk about myself. I don't care, now and then I'll give you a hard time about, oh, you know, you don't have, you know, guys who like basketball on, and, you know, every once in a while I'll give TD a tough time about, you know, his NBA free stance or whatever. But at the end of the day, people should just feel free to enjoy the sports that they like. You know, basketball is the sport that I love, for my own personal reasons. Everybody's got their reasons for the sports that they love. And, you know, I think that's ultimately okay. I guess the reason why I had mentioned it, on that I wanted to come on was just to, you know, sort of be able to talk about my point of view on the sport and why, you know, why I think the NBA is still great. I don't like the super teams, don't get me wrong. I'm hoping that we'll see sort of a shift in that, and that it can change back in the other direction. But still, when I watch the best teams play in the NBA, I'm mesmerized by it. I mean, I'm absolutely riveted. And I thought that last year's playoffs were just exceptional, and some of the best basketball I'd seen in a long time. So as somebody who just loves the sport, it's great for me, but I don't begrudge it. I can't tell anybody that they're wrong for, you know, having a hard time coming back, because, like I told you to start off this podcast, I had a hard time coming back. Like, it took me a while to get my breath back. Like, LeBron knocked he took the breath out of all of us, and, you know, it's a lot to overcome. And I don't think as a Cavaliers fan, and people who are not maybe quite as hardcore, you know, into the sport itself and into the game, I think it's just going to take some exciting basketball from Cleveland. And until the Cavaliers can play exciting, winning basketball, that's not going to change. But I have a hard time believing that if the Cavaliers get back into the playoffs, that that people won't be excited about it again. I just think it's cyclical. We're in a down period, so it's only natural to be down about the sport, as a whole, I guess.
Yeah, I'm glad we had the conversation. A lot of it is I'm just down on myself for being so down. It's a vicious cycle. I don't want to be so down about it. I want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy it more. And it's such a stark contrast. You know, the price never changes. The commitment never changes for we fans, and we have so little control over how the product turns out. And then all of a sudden it turns out the billionaire Dan Gilbert also has so little control over how the product turns out. At least in the short run. It's undeniably a rude awakening, and one that David Stern and the rest can't account for. I'll give you the last word. But my last word is the Kings gotta stay. They gotta stay in Sacramento. That's all I really care about for the rest of this NBA season. Obviously the Cavaliers, sitting at 10 wins aren't going to do much. I'll be paying attention, but I just hope. I hope somehow, some way, the Kings stay in Sacramento.
I wish that it was legal for teams to follow the Green Bay model. I'd love to see how much money the city of Sacramento could raise if those fans could chip in. You know, hell, I'd love to be an owner of the Kings if it would help them stay. I'd love
Kickstarter, to baby, Kickstarter.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. It's hard. I don't know what to say about it. Like I said, it's a travesty. Like, this shouldn't happen to those fans in Sacramento. And, it's not right. But like I said, the fans are the ones who get screwed. You know, you get screwed by the superstars on your team when they leave. You get, you know, and you get screwed by your owners. And, you know, Browns fans certainly got screwed. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter how good of fans you are. It should, but it just doesn't.
Well, that's cool. So I expect an open letter from you to Sacramento fans.
All right. we need to keep the open letter chain going.
It was funny. Ziller's open letter this morning was like mocking open letters as he was writing one, which I really appreciated.
It's so great. Like, I just want to be, I just want to, like, you know, the open letters going back and forth between Sacramento and Seattle, and all of a sudden, here come open letters from Cleveland. Like, what? What are those guys talking about over there? I don't know.
It's an open letter orgy.
That's absolutely.
And that is where we're going to leave it.
That is a great way to end it.
Yeah. All right. So thanks to Andrew, and hopefully everyone got their pro NBA fill today. And obviously I come with the opinions I come with. I don't try and do anything but let you know how I feel. I don't have a larger vendetta. I love to talk to people all the time who disagree with me or who, you know, I love that. I had a Steelers blogger on here, so always game. Anyway, thanks to Andrew, and this has been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. Waiting for next year.